If there's anybody new who's just in the very beginning of their journey to separating from alcohol, who just discovered this and are listening to it, if I could just give you one sentence of advice, it would be this: place yourself unreservedly under the care and direction of an experienced sponsor. They're going to ask you to do things that are stupid and that aren't going to work for you. To be a good AA member, you do those anyway.
I heard it through the grapevine.
Welcome. It's the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, featuring the collected voices of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am Alice, an alcoholic currently in Durham, North Carolina.
Hey, Alice. Hey, everybody. I'm Sam, an alcoholic in Palm Springs, California.
Sam, I read the daily quote in the app the other day, and I really liked it. It hit me.
There's some good ones there. And folks, you can read them in the Grapevine app every day on your phone or sign up to receive daily quotes in your inbox at aagrapevine.org. So, Alice, what was it?
Quote, it's important to monitor my thinking, to be conscious of what my thoughts are. It's important to monitor my thinking, to be conscious of what thoughts I'm hugging to my heart, inviting to stay in my mind, encouraging to hang around my head. Isn't that beautiful? It's from the January 2006 Circles of Sobriety Beginner's Book.
It's our brains that mess us up. It's that stinking thinking, but that stinking thinking can be absolutely amazing thinking too.
You know, my favorite chapter in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous is more about alcoholism because it really focuses on that second part of my first step problem, right? The voice in my head, the voice in my head, the crazy thoughts that I will have. And I've got to be forever vigilant about that.
And if I am aware that I'm having those thoughts, then maybe it's the higher self and lower self type of thing going on there. Yeah. I'm of two minds.
I'm of two minds. Yeah.
I'll try to keep it to two. But Alice, we've got a letter that I think you're going to like. This is from Gary D., and the subject is the three basic instincts.
Let's hear it.
Just listened to Crystal and Alice share about the three basic instincts. Thank you. I was introduced to them 14 years ago, taking my first fourth step inventory. I had no idea about them, but what an impact they had for me then and now to get an understanding of why I was so restless, irritable, and discontent all the time. As the 12 and 12 states, nearly every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instinct. Mm-hmm. When that happens, our great natural assets, the instincts, have turned into physical and mental liabilities. Welcome and thank you for your service, Alice. Gary D.
That's very sweet. Like, that's the whole deal here, to be helpful. Thank you, Gary, for letting me know that I was helpful. I just love being a part of the team.
And I love that you're here, Alice.
So who's our guest today?
Today, we are welcoming Chris S. from Blairstown, New Jersey.
Ah, my friend Chris. I love Chris.
Chris is awesome, and I know that because he's your friend. Shout out to Chris. But first, hi, folks. We need your stories on the individual traditions. Pick one and write about your or your group's experience with it. How has a tradition played a part in your life? How has your understanding of a tradition changed? What is a personal experience where a tradition played a part? Visit aagrapevine.org for guidelines and to submit.
Chris, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous member in good standing for many decades now. My sobriety date is on or around December 28th, 1989. I didn't have a calendar on the wall during that last detox, so I'm kind of winging it. But it was somewhere around there. So that's what I claim. And I live in Blairstown, New Jersey. My home group is the Monday night Blairstown Big Book group.
Tell me something, Chris. What is an Alcoholics Anonymous member in good standing? What does that mean?
So in good standing goes back to the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you were to drink, you would lose all status in Alcoholics Anonymous. It goes back to like the 40s. So someone who is in good standing is somebody who's had a good period of current uninterrupted sobriety, and they're very, very active in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, meetings, steps, service.
It sounds like someone who's all in.
Yeah, well, someone who's been real consistent and really turned it into a way of life, both the fellowship and the recovery process.
You know, Chris, sometime after we met, I found that Founders Day talk that you did on the original Bill story. I would love for you just to talk a little bit about your take on those first 6 or 8 pages that are not in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? They're not even in the first manuscript. It's this very early version of Bill's story.
So Bill was probably a genius at understanding the alcoholic. Nobody could paint an alcoholic into the corner like Bill. He just, like, you read the big book and it's like, how did he know this? It's the first time in the English language my personal experience was laid out, right? The really cool thing about Bill is he dug deeper than the solution for alcoholism is sobriety. He dug way deeper than that.
Yeah, he did.
Because he tried just staying sober and it didn't work. Dr. Bob tried just staying sober and it didn't work. So there has to be a deeper self-reflection. And, you know, you two were sharing a little bit on that in the beginning of this podcast, the self-reflection that's necessary for us to understand really what we're up against. You know, Bill identified a couple of things in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that it took me decades to really, truly, at depth understand. I believe that Bill Wilson saw self as a condition, not as us, but as a condition that must be recovered from. So there's some language in Bill's story that says selfishness must be destroyed. There's more language as you go through the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no way of entirely getting rid of self.
Without his help, right? Without aid.
Help. Mm-hmm. And then he even says selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our troubles. Various manifestations of self are what have defeated us. So here's the alcoholic. Here's me as an alcoholic, right? I am so self-conscious. I am beyond self-conscious. Everything's about me. What did you say, Sam? You were talking about me, weren't you? I'd go to a holiday party and, you know, somebody would say something and, you know, my boss is a jerk and my family doesn't understand me and my girlfriend isn't loyal. And I mean, everything is like this massive toxic experience of self-consciousness as the alcoholic. Now, Bill saw that needed to be treated for the alcoholic to be able to stay separated from alcohol. And I think that's really where his genius was. So really, in a nutshell, my journey from an active tongue-chewing, knee-walking, not able to operate my own pants zipper drunk, you know, my journey from there to here has really been a journey in moving from this terrible state of oppressive self-consciousness to what the big book describes as God consciousness. It's just basically spirituality, you know, really, really understanding my place in this world. And through a lot of self-reflection and inventory and amends and, all, you know, step 10 and 11 and working with others and all the activity that you get me to do, what that's done is it's placed me more closely in the divine now instead of suffering from all the damage that was caused by me and others in the past and all the anxiety and fear that could be caused to me in the future. I'm placed in the divine now where there's some peace. And if I'm there, I'm not drinking.
Right.
It's not even on the table.
Doesn't even show
There's
up.
No reason to, you know. Yeah. What I mean? So what I think Bill discovered, and what he tries to talk about imperfectly in some of his early writings, but he had that awakened spirit, and all of this stuff came to him, and he spent the rest of his life, you know, detailing for us this recovery modality.
Yeah. But you know, the thing that you're talking about, this journey from like being the hot mess that I was when I got here to being a member in good standing, you know, I think one of the real challenges is how it looks with skin on it, right? Like that I'm all in with something and then I move on and then I'm all in and I move on.
Enthusiasts.
But it doesn't last. Like I don't have legs to anything because I'm trying to prove to the world that I'm important, which is what Bill says in the beginning of the story. But people who are comfortable with who they are don't have anything to prove.
I'm going to go back to Bill and I'm going to talk from my own experience. But Bill, in his essay, Emotional Sobriety, and in the first paragraph of his essay on the 12th step, in the 12 and 12, he really thought that there was going to be an additional awakening with us. And what we were going to realize is that all of our suffering is related to our unnatural attachments to outcomes. So let's look at that as me, like as I'm growing up. I haven't even taken a drink yet. I joined the wrestling team. I went to one practice. I joined the Boy Scouts. I went on one camping trip. I took guitar lessons. I took two lessons and stole a guitar. I had great intentions, but whatever I was doing was not satisfying this desperate need within me that you can't fill. So I looked somewhere else. I was never consistent with anything. You know, I went to college, and, you know, I was gangbusters. And then I spent 6 years getting 12 credits. You know, it's just over and over again. I became an electrician and didn't bother learning how to do it. So I would blow stuff up all the time. I wasn't interested. Learning how to do it didn't interest me, you know, getting a paycheck. And so I'm being driven by these unnatural instinctual needs to get something out of something that's not meant to give me that, you know, like I would date a woman if I thought she would make me feel really good. I would take a drug because it would make me feel really good. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking outside to fill the spiritual vacancy within me.
Yeah. You know, Chris, I'm relating so strongly with this lack of completion of things. That's a huge part of my story. I remember sitting down with my first sponsor when we had completed the 12 steps the first time that I did them and telling her, I think that's the first time that I have actually completed something. It was an unusual experience.
And how old were you?
I was 32.
I think that's true for a lot of us. The first time that we commit to something and can see it all the way through is often the steps. And absent doing that, I don't think that the real solution available to us is accessible. I don't think that I can get happy, joyous, and free without completing the path, which is to separate me from a dependence on things outside of myself. It's to give me a connection to a power.
You both brought up something really good that I feel the need to share on. And that is, I want to talk just the fellowship. The fellowship and the program are two completely different mm-hmm. things that work in concert with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What the fellowship did for me was it made me feel comfortable enough to stick around to discover that there was a recovery process available. So thank God we have the fellowship, but none of us are, you know, so downtrodden that we won't be welcomed into Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm. And thank God.
And you welcomed me and I was a mess. Okay. I was a hot mess and violent and touchy. You know, I was like a time bomb. Yet you made me feel comfortable enough. And I actually started making friends and things. And along the way, I got convinced that there's more. There's more to Alcoholics Anonymous than meetings and coffee and, you know, the diner and all that. That there is an actual process of recovery, the 12 steps specifically, that will bring about emotional and spiritual peace within me.
Yes.
And without that, I'm just, the time and the place is going to come and alcohol is going to go back in my body. I'm convinced of that. I also came in when I was 32, did my first run through the steps when I was 33. And I've continued to really, really try to pay attention to that stuff and try to apply that stuff in my life. And for one reason or another, I have not given up on that. I believe it's the grace of God, because I'm programmed to quit. I'm programmed to stop. I'm programmed to go
Absolutely.
Somewhere.
Absolutely. We sure are. You know, I got super lucky. A new friend that I met at IKIPA in San Francisco last year told me that he was coming into the Coachella Valley to visit his mom and reached out to me. And we got together for coffee yesterday and had a conversation. And one of the things that we were talking about was, you know, it took the pain of my active alcoholism to drive me into the rooms and convince me to do the step work. Pain can still push me to do things, but a wonderful thing has happened. I have done enough of this work now to know that I don't necessarily know what's on the other side of the work, but I know that it's good. And that knowledge can pull me to do the work without pain having to push me.
Yeah. You know, I often tell people that it's unceasing, unsparing self-evaluation that keeps me growing. It doesn't matter what happens outside, how other people act. I get the guy, I don't get the guy, I get the job, I get the money, I get the diagnosis. That it's not what happens. It doesn't matter why I'm disturbed. What really matters is why I'm disturbable. Like, what's going on inside? In learning how to look at that, for me, has been the doorway to freedom. I don't have to like what's happening, but I don't have to be suffering.
You know, we always want to be the least disturbed person in any room.
That's the goal.
That's the brass ring, right? So let's look really briefly just at the 12 steps. And remember, Bill is saying that various manifestations of self are what have defeated us. And this self-centeredness, you know, must be reduced drastically. So in step three, we make a decision to do that. In step four, we inventory the grosser handicaps, the largest manifestations of self that have defeated us. In step five, we share those with another person, honestly, for probably the first time. In step six, we become willing to have these manifestations of self and the damage they do removed from us. In step seven, we humbly ask for those to be removed. In step eight, we put a list together of the people and the institutions that our manifestations of self have harmed. And then we go out and we make amends to the people and the institutions that we have harmed through our manifestations of self. In step 10, it teaches us to continually look for these manifestations of self and take action when they crop up. And then in step 11, we are to grow spiritually. They're giving us practices to grow spiritually. Always be aware that selfishness is going to creep in somewhere. But through prayer and through meditation and through spiritual reading and all these other things that they ask us to do, we start to distance ourselves from this condition Bill recognized as self.
Yeah. I've recently come to believe that the journey for me is from perception to perspective, that I can see things from my point of view, my perception, what you did to me, what you said to me, what I got, what I didn't get, how it impacted me. And I'm trapped in that, right? I'm suffering from all of the things that don't swing my way. But if I can make the journey from perception to perspective, then I can see the bigger, larger world, that maybe the way you acted had nothing to do with me. Maybe I'm just in the blast radius. Maybe that wasn't the best thing for me. And it sounds simple, but in practice, that's the work for me.
Yeah, and recognizing it is not going to offer us the power to overcome it. That's really what the steps are for. The steps offer us power. A power greater than ourselves that will do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. So we're great at saying, oh my God, I should have done better. I can't believe I did that again. Oh, I'm really trying, but I don't seem to be getting it. I mean, we're great at all that, but we've been given an opportunity to practice a recovery program where the power is given to us. In other words, my drinking, I was released from my drinking. A lot of the character defects that were really blatant and really harmed other people, I was released from them. Now, I want to work on them and I want to take ownership of, you know, of overcoming them, right? But that's not what happens. You know, what happens is I look over here and I practice these spiritual processes and I am rendered recovered,
right?
If that makes any sense.
It does. I love that you separated the fellowship from the program. But so that people don't think that you came in as some kind of Yoda, would you talk about drunk dialing?
All right. So, you know, I'll give you a story. Listen, I was a mess. And probably the entire 80s I spent by myself. I'd blown up a marriage. It was ugly. And I was just working and drinking. Now, drunken dialing is when you go into a blackout and you're lonely and you decide you're going to call somebody up, right? So I know a lot of people have done this, right? So what would happen is the phone was downstairs and I would come down in the morning and I would see all the phone numbers that I had looked up or got from information or whatever. And I'd go, oh my God, I called Mary Lou McGillicuddy. Oh no, you know, from like eighth grade. Oh my God. I can just imagine, you know, Mary Lou, I haven't talked to her in about 10 years. I was so telling you, I love you, you know, oh my God. So it was terrible coming to the realization that I'd embarrassed myself. So I started cutting the phone line in the basement. You know, the phone line would go in the basement. I'd cut the phone line. Well, I'd get drunk and I'd put it back together. I was an electrician. I wasn't a good one. But so I started cutting it by the knot hole in the floor joists, you know, so it'd be really hard to put together. So I'd cut the cord off of, you know, the family vacuum, you know, to make it work. One time I even cut the cord up by the peak of the house, way up where the electricity comes into the house. I got up on an extension ladder and cut it. Well, somehow I got up there. I put a milk crate down and then the extension. I somehow got it back. Well, finally, there was so much static on the phone line because of there was like, so I had to call the phone company. And the phone company guy comes and he's downstairs in the basement with his flashlight. And he's, what the hell? He goes, it looks like somebody cut this phone line 20 different places and scotch taped it back together. You know, now you don't want to look stupid. So I said, yeah, that's what I thought it was too. You know, we'll probably need to run a new line. I mean, you know, stuff like that was going on all the time. It was a crazy dysfunctional life that I was living.
But you got to admit, we alcoholics are entertaining sometimes.
And resourceful.
And it was always your fault because I was so self-centered. Whatever happened was your fault. You know, I'd drive over your house and park on your cat and you would overreact, right? You know, and I'd be like, what? There's cats everywhere. You know, yeah, you shouldn't have let them out.
This is your fault.
It was always somebody's fault. I got to tell you, one time in a blackout, I threatened my boss's life. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill your family. I'm going to kill all of you. Right. Because I had a resentment. And because it was in a blackout, I didn't remember doing it. Mm-hmm. So I walk into work the next day, like, do-do-do-do-do. And he's like, you. And I'm like, what? He's like, what do you mean, what? I go, what are you mad about? He's like, you don't remember? I go, remember what? He goes, you called me up last night. You threatened to kill all of us. I'm like, why'd you do that? You know, what did you do to make me so mad?
That's what I was waiting to hear. What did you do to make me say that to you?
Because it's your fault.
It's inconvenient for it to be my fault.
Chris, what does a week in recovery look like for you today?
So let's start with Monday. Monday night's my home group. I go to my home group. Tuesday night is date night. It's a night where I've got nothing. You know, leave me alone. It's me and my wife. Wednesday night, I have a treatment center commitment. I'm big book Chris at this big treatment center. And I go in and I regale them with my wonderful knowledge of the big book and try to be halfway entertaining as well. Thursday night, I do a podcast on Take 12 Radio. Right now, we're going through the language of the heart. We're doing a podcast on every single article in Language of the Heart, which is all Milton's Grapevine writings, right?
Oh, wow.
Friday night, I get a million calls from my sponsees. Saturday, a million calls from my sponsees. I usually try to leave weekends open because I do a lot of traveling. For AA, just in the next 2 months, I'm in West Palm. I'm in Kansas City. I try to leave the weekends open. But Sundays is sponsee call Chris Day. because I can't just randomly get phone calls and really be able to concentrate on them to the point that they deserve to be concentrated on. So I'm prepared. I'm spiritually ready on Sundays to call. And I guarantee one of my knuckleheads is going to call in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl.
Guarantee.
So that sounds like it might be a premeditated resentment there, Chris.
We're not self-centered. they're not treating me right. You know, I really got to unload. You know, somebody will do that. And you know what I got to do? I got to listen.
Yeah.
Because that's part of the 12th step, which is offering my time and my experience to people who are asking for it. It's not my time. It's all God's.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you a bit.
It was a joy to have some time with you today.
Hey, thank both of you for asking me. This was fun.
Hey, Don, what are you playing with on your phone? We're supposed to be recording a podcast here.
Oh, sorry, Sam. I was just checking my spiritual fitness in the new Grapevine app.
Oh, the daily spiritual maintenance checklist? Well, are you fit?
Yep, says so here. And look, there's a daily quote and a sobriety calculator.
And you can read the latest issue and all of the past issues all the way back to 1944.
And you can have the app read the magazine to you out loud as a playlist. It's the monthly magazine in print and audio.
Right in your pocket. The Grapevine and Lavinia apps are now available for both iOS and Android phones. To get yours, go to the App Store on your phone.
Hey, Don, have we heard from any listeners?
Why, yes, we have, Sam. It's time for listener feedback.
Call 212-870-3418 or write us at podcast@aagrapevine.org.
We received this email from Donna G.
Dear Grapevine staff, I greatly appreciate the Grapevine podcast. It's an excellent complement to my recovery routine. I don't go to a regular Tuesday meeting, and it's been great to have you in my back pocket to fill the gap. I literally have you in my back pocket with earbuds while I walk the concourse for physical exercise. I listen to y'all for spiritual exercise.
That's great.
I recently listened to season 6, episode 4, and greatly appreciated Sloan's candor regarding her need to seek mental health services beyond what AA could provide. I'm glad to see mental health issues and treatment becoming normalized. I was equally pleased to hear her candor regarding the rape she suffered at the hand of her father and how that impacted her life. However, I was disappointed to find the discussion secreted away as an, quote, aftersode, end quote. This type of stashing the secrets is what keeps women feeling dirty and ashamed and keeps men from facing the damage they've done to women. With this being an adult form, it should have been included in the body of the podcast. That said, your willingness to talk about this issue at all and expose the large percentage of women who come into recovery with rape as a part of their story is to be applauded. I will be serving as a speaker at a large speaker meeting tomorrow, and it is a part of my story. I will share it proudly. I will call it what it is. The violent act of rape, whether it's from a sibling, a neighbor, a parent, or a stranger, whether the victim is 10 or 20, it is rape, a violent act perpetrated in the most personally violating, damaging manner. I will take Sloan with me into that share, knowing that we survivors stand in solidarity. Thank you for all that you do to help us recovering addicts. Your podcast is spot on. I announce it regularly at meetings. Best regards, Donna G.
Thanks, Donna. Chris C., the Grapevine publisher, replied, "Dear Donna, thank you for your feedback. Our intent with moving Sloan's discussion of rape and abuse was not to hide it, but to be able to forewarn listeners that the discussion might be difficult for some. We hear what you're saying, though, and we'll consider your feedback as we make such decisions in the future. Thanks for listening. And for letting others know about the podcast, we appreciate it very much. Chris C., publisher, AA Grapevine Incorporated."
You know, Don, I think this is a beautiful letter. Thank you, Donna.
Yes, thank you,
Donna. You know, Donna, you may have heard in that episode my acknowledgement that I too came in with sexual violence as a part of my story, and so many women do. And I think it's pushing the envelope for us to put it out there and have the discussion. And frankly, I was cracked open by Sloan's story and the courage, and not only the rape itself, but the way that Sloan was able to use, as the book calls it, our dark past as our greatest asset. Not to say that rape or sexual molestation is ever good, but to say that everything that happens to us can be turned to good effect. So I think that you make a good point. And I also think that it's such a delicate issue for some people who are not stable in their recovery, that giving people a warning has value too.
Thanks, Alice. Thanks, Donna. This email is from Jeremiah L. He's referring to Season 6, Episode 8, I Wanted to Get the Heat Off.
Greetings. Thank you for this week's interview. While I take from them all a bit, this week seemed to flow so well.
Thanks, Jeremiah. That's good to hear, because we had a last-minute cancellation on that episode, so we used a pre-recorded interview with Debbie. I'm glad to hear it all flowed. I like to be in the flow.
Thank you for writing us.
If you're like this alcoholic,
and this alcoholic,
there is never, ever enough. Stick around after the close for a little extra.
Oh, yeah, I'll have some extra.
I'm at the very wit's end. Cuckoo.
As your psychiatrist, I have to ask you, have you ever wondered what makes you drink the way you do?
Nobody makes me. I'm a volunteer.
Thanks for joining us. The AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour is posted every Monday and is produced by AA Grapevine, Inc. We don't speak for AA as a whole. We share the experience, strength, and hope of members to help others recover from alcoholism. Podcast info, including how to call in, is at aagrapevine.org/podcast. Search AA Grapevine in the App Store on your phone or find AA Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube. All things Grapevine are available at aagrapevine.org. If you want to know more about AA, search online for Alcoholics Anonymous in your city or visit AA.org.
That was freaking amazing.
All right. I've got a quote here for us. This is from New York, New York, in May of 1999, Sunlight and Air, from Sober and Out. The quote is, "My understanding of a higher power is still subject to shifts. Sometimes I think of it as the unknowable or as the great what is. Often I envision it as an indifferent force, something like an electrical current that is available to all living things and from which human beings can derive strength and generosity and acceptance. The one thing I feel sure of is that it's more powerful than my will." What does that mean to you?
So the simplest understanding of God is power, right? A power greater than yourself, power. Really, really quickly, I was married to a Catholic early on in my sobriety, and she would drag me off to Mass every once in a while against my will. And I remember I was at this Christmas Eve Mass, and one of the bishops or cardinals or something was walking around, and, you know, he had the hat, and, you know, he was all decked out, and he was you know, throwing water. And all of a sudden I got splashed by a bunch of holy water, and I got pissed. And you know, my wife's trying to calm me down, right? And he's mumbling something as he's walking by. And I finally heard him. And you know what he was mumbling? The mystery. The mystery. If you think you can define every single characteristic and you've got it all laid out and it's all a mathematical formula for you, you're
delusional.
Yeah, delusional. One of the most important parts about it is it's a mystery, but we can experience the power. As alcoholics, we actually can get the results of the direct power of God working in us and through us can be made manifest. And that's what makes me a believer, because I've experienced the power.